This is the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast with Andy Benoit and your host, John Engel.
Hello, once again. This is the MMQB Podcast. I'm John Engel here with Andy Benoit. You can follow him on Twitter at Andy_Benoit or myself at Engelsengel. Hey, Andy, another pretty wild week in the NFL. It's been as exciting as ever. And
they say that about every week.
Well, that's how
they call
it
wild. Every week is wild.
But there's no bad weeks in the NFL.
There aren't.
You can pick out about four or five games a week that are always compelling. You know?
Yeah. And even the ones that aren't compelling, there's still something like the Falcons-Bucks game that was last Thursday. You know, that was not a compelling game, but you can't tell me that wasn't compelling, right? I mean, that just the way that unfolded, the pageantry with the games, and then to see a lot, even the lopsided games are fun to me.
Especially since a game like that has so many elements that we're especially looking for to kind of gauge what's going to happen going forward. And the Falcons are one of those teams that we'll talk about later in the show. But first, let's talk about what could possibly be the game of the week in the Eagles visiting the Niners. The Eagles undefeated, as you know, and the Niners off to a little bit of a rough start, and now people are starting to question Jim Harbaugh's allegiance to the team. What's up with that?
Well, I mean, I don't know what's up with that. We hear about that every once in a while. What's interesting to me, and I'm not surprised by this, and I'm actually relieved because I wrote up this in the previews, and then they didn't do it the first 2 weeks, is the Niners have changed their modus operandi recently. They've become, at least last week, they were against Arizona. They were a passing team. They were out of spread sets, a lot of four-receiver formations, four wide receiver, not just tight ends kicking out, but actual wide receivers on the field. And this was with Vernon Davis out of the lineup. And they put the game more in Colin Kaepernick's hands. And obviously they didn't get the win, so you could say, well, it didn't work. But if you look at Kaepernick's numbers out of the spread sets and based on what they asked him to do, I think they're going to come away, and I think they're going to come away and say there was a lot of it that worked. That obviously they're going to want to feed Frank Gore more than they did. I think you want to get Carlos Hyde involved because, to me, he looks like almost a younger Frank Gore in some respects. But over the course of time, this team is becoming and will continue to become a passing team. And Harbaugh, he's a running-type offensive coach, but he was a quarterback. He knows how to run a passing offense. And they're going to become a dime defensive team as well with three safeties and three cornerbacks on the field, which will make them a lot more multiple. So it's a different Niners team than we have seen before, and I'm curious how that's going to work out for them.
Well, I think the real curious thing is seeing Kaepernick being used in such a different capacity this year. It seems like you mentioned them putting the ball in Kaepernick's hands a lot more, but it seems like trusting him as that true passer is just something we're not used to, so maybe that's where we all want to look first as what could be going wrong with the Niners, but it, as you explained, may not be the truth in the matter.
Yeah, and we can't jump to any of those because this is a very much a work in progress in terms of evaluating Kaepernick in this kind of a role. And they could come out this week against the Eagles and run the ball 100 times.
Right, and to write off the Niners in week four is just
absurd.
Anyway.
We're not even having that.
No,
neither
exactly.
of us are talking about that. We're talking conceptually, what is the 49ers foundation as a football team? And they don't have the same personnel that they've had before, especially on defense. That defense is not as good as it has been. And when you have less talent, you need to compensate with your scheme. In the past, Vic Fangio, their defensive coordinator, has just lined up in a 3-4 set or in a nickel package with Aldon Smith outside of Justin Smith and just rushed four guys and said, we're playing straight-up football, often man-to-man coverage, and our guys are better than your guys. When your guys are no longer better than their guys, now Vic Fangio's got to do different things. He has to blitz. He has to disguise, which he's done before in his career. He's very good at that, but it's new to the Niners, and we're going to see a different Niners team here. How that translates to wins and losses, I don't know, but I don't think fans shouldn't go around criticizing the Niners or putting Jim Harbaugh's head on a platter or anything ridiculous like that. Football teams have to evolve, and when the personnel's not as good, this stuff is inevitable. And if you have a guy like Kaepernick, and I'm not a huge Kaepernick guy, as most people know, but why wouldn't you build around a talent like that? Why wouldn't you, as a franchise, do everything you can to lean on Kaepernick's talent?
Well, but I don't think the question is really with the offense anymore. It seems that lack of push on the defensive line and up front has just left that secondary so vulnerable. Is that then they're just getting picked apart?
Yeah, and that's what's so difficult as a defensive coordinator then is at what point do you decide to compensate for that and go a little bit away from your traditional approach, which, again, for them has been man-to-man coverage. And we're starting to see that now, and we're going to have to keep seeing that because Ahmad Brooks is not getting the pressure. They miss Alden Smith. They have to do something to dictate the terms of engagement, which means i.e. get pressure on the passer.
Well, and defensive issues and defensive questions have to be the nightmare for a team going up against a team like the Eagles with so many options and so many weapons that we've come to know can really, really hurt a poor defense.
Well, what the Eagles can do is make you become simplified, which wouldn't have been a problem for the Niners last season. But the reason they make you become simplified is because when you play so fast, the defense doesn't have time to coordinate different stuff. You can't disguise coverages. You can't do convoluted blitzes because that takes communication and you don't have the time to talk before the snap. So what you do as a defense is you line up and you play man-to-man. You just yell out, I got him, you got him, here we go, and the ball snapped. The Niners were totally equipped to play that way a year ago. They are not equipped to play that way now. And so I think this matchup will be problematic for them.
Well, and Nick Foles also has that battered offensive line in front of him that we're starting to see when you pressure, as we've talked about in the past. I mean, this is no secret. When you get pressure on Nick Foles, the whole game changes for that offense.
And they need a running game. And last week,
hasn't been there.
Yeah. Well, and LeSean McCoy, 22 yards on 19 carries last week. Now, you can look at that at one of two ways. They got the win anyway. Or you could say the running game's falling apart because their offensive line is falling apart. I tend to lean more towards that one. I think they need this offensive line because LeSean McCoy is not one of these guys that's totally dependent on his O-line. Nick Foles might be one of those guys at some point. All quarterbacks are to a certain degree. McCoy can create his own yards, but where this offensive line is so valuable for Philadelphia is they are such a space-oriented attack, especially horizontally, and it's not just in the running game, but also their screen game, which is a huge part of the offense. Almost a third of their offense, you could even say, is the screen game, a third is the running game. The offensive line and the mobility of those guys inside, that's the key. And now with Kelce gone and Mathis gone, it's a totally different offensive line.
And I think that's really interesting about when we talk about even the Eagles' offense being slightly limited, it's still very good. So
it's well designed. It's
right.
Extremely well designed.
And see, there's a lot of teams that are struggling offensively so far this season. The Green Bay Packers being one of them, going up against the Chicago Bears, whose defense has had just a flurry of injuries that have really made them kind of change things around. What do you see going into this Packers-Bears divisional matchup there in the North?
Well, Green Bay's running game is also not going right now.
It's kind of a similar situation.
Yeah, and Eddie Lacy, he's got no juice. And he's not a guy that has a lot of juice anyway. He's a wear-you-down type back. He's one of those guys where I couldn't believe the production he had last season because he doesn't look the part. And I think when you don't look the part, you are a little bit contingent on getting some help around you. And if the passing game's not clicking, Eddie Lacy's going to be running against more heavier boxes, which now it's a grinded out type of game.
And you got to hold on to the football if you're Eddie Lacy, too.
Well, every running back. Yeah,
well, I know, but if you're going to be one of those bruising kind of, I don't want to say short yardage, but consistent yardage backs, this it can't be an issue. That is a problem.
I think James Starks, I'm not saying he's better than Lacy, but this offense has more of a...
Fit him.
Yeah, it has more of a kick in its step, a pep in its step, you could say, when James Starks is in there. But it comes back to the passing game, and the rhythm has not been there with Aaron Rodgers. They've done a lot of isolation routes with the wide receivers, and they have receivers that are good enough to win one-on-one like that, certainly. But when those guys don't win, then the offense can quickly lose rhythm in a hurry because you have no foundation to go back to. You don't have a lot of guaranteed built-in completions.
Well, and against this Detroit defensive line, I mean, you don't have a lot of time to win on the outside, too. You got to make things happen really quickly.
A Chicago defensive line, you mean, yeah.
Oh, did I say Detroit?
Yeah, well, they played Detroit last week. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, John, because sadly enough for Green Bay, this loss against Detroit last week, and they only scored 7 points, that came with a tremendous performance from the offensive line. The Packers' offensive line, it was a totally opposite game. The Packers' offensive line was able to handle the Detroit Lions' defensive line in pass protection, which never happens. And then the Packer wide receivers could not get open from the Detroit secondary, which also never happens. So now moving forward to this game, How does Green Bay match up against Chicago? We know these teams know each other very well. The Bears are a similar scheme to what they ran last season on defense, even though the personnel is a little bit different. I think they match up well because Aaron Rodgers will have a chance to extend the play against these guys. And I, you know how I said they don't have any built-in completions for success? And it's not they don't have any. They have the smoke screens, the quick screens, but they have a lot of – they rely on Rodgers' talent a lot. Well, if he can work late in the down, I think he becomes a more comfortable passer at some points with that.
What do you think of Kyle Fuller so far for the Bears? Did you like what
I'm on the bandwagon.
Are you already?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't the whole Fuller family, too, all corner, all defensive
There's
backs
been
from
others,
like Virginia Tech?
He's the best of the bunch to come through yet.
Sure,
though.
Yeah.
And he has that Bear mentality for forcing turnovers. He understands coverages, and I think he understands angles and route concepts. It's not just that, you know, some guys can just line up and play their coverage. That's fine. If you're a great athlete, that can work. But they're the special ones, and the kind of like a Charles Tillman that the Bears have had, understand how the coverages are malleable in relation to the routes
it's an
around them.
Thing.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an instinct thing. And there's probably some preparation that gets involved as well. But when you're a rookie and you're only entering, what's this, his fourth game as a pro, then he's going on some instinct. I think he looks very good for them. Now, I'm concerned about who they're going to put in the slot. If they're going with Isaiah Fry in the slot, which it looks like they are, that's going to be a problem. And that's something Randall Cobb's going to have a field day against them this week if it's going to be one-on-one against Fry.
It doesn't seem like there's any real favor to one team or another in this matchup, though. It seems like a pretty pick-em kind of a game.
You know, I think you could say that about any NFL game, couldn't you?
I mean, you could if you want to be boring on this podcast, Andy.
Okay, well, since we're picking, I'm going to, I guess, we're, I pick them.
We usually don't.
I'm going to pick them the Packers this week.
Okay. And, well, and the Packers were one of your favorites in the NFC to start the season, too. And then everything shakes out the way we've seen the NFL so far in the first
three weeks.
The New Orleans Saints this week are taking on the Cowboys. The Cowboys had that big 21-point comeback, and all hail Tony Romo, I guess. But something about Tony Romo so far this season, I've noticed it. I saw you tweet it either today or yesterday, is the arm strength doesn't look to be there like it has in the past, and now he's starting to fulfill the narrative that the anti-Tony Romo people have written for the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, fulfill it in what way?
Well, I think Tony Romo has been just utterly disregarded as a good quarterback by a lot of
this season.
In the past, over the last 4 or 5 years.
And so you're saying he has not been a good quarterback this year, though? That's
right.
What
I'm saying he's starting to sink into that.
Well,
that kind of image.
He's become a complimentary player this year. He was not good in week one. We can all agree on that. And against St. Louis last week, he played well enough to win the game,
enough to beat Austin Davis.
Austin Davis is not, you know, we're going to talk about the Rams later at some point. Do they have a bye this week? They might have a bye.
I think they do. I think they have a bye.
Austin Davis is not a bad quarterback. I'll say that.
He
we'll save it for
good, yeah.
We'll save it for a future week. Tony Romo, he did get a coverage bust on the Dez Bryant 68-yard touchdown, so maybe that's a wash. And then the pick six that he threw to Janoris Jenkins, that to me is kind of an example of the arm strength. It wasn't a bad throw. It was a really good cornerback play. But the ball did not have the same kind of zip that it normally had. It just was missing just enough. And that maybe that's the difference, although that one may have been a pick six the whole way. It doesn't matter. The point is that's a big-time NFL throw you have to make on a regular basis. That's not an easy throw, and it's one that I don't think Romo made as crisply as he normally would. Now, we don't want to get here and dissect one single throw and say that's the whole truth, but here's what we know about the Cowboys this year and why I think there's some validity to talking about Romo's physical traits possibly being on the decline. They've become a running team this season. And that fits their personnel. They have a great zone-blocking line, probably next to Philadelphia's, and right now everyone's hurt, so now it is the most athletic offensive line in the league. And they have a very good running back to go behind it in DeMarco Murray. So they have the personnel to be run-oriented. They haven't done it before, though, because they've always had the personnel to also pass. Now they're choosing to run a lot, and I think that tells you something.
So then explain how a team like the Saints would try to limit that running game and force Tony Romo to find options like Dez Bryant and go elsewhere outside of DeMarco Murray.
Well, you put a guy in the box. I mean, it's a numbers game. You hear about the eighth guy dropping in the box. That's true. And the Saints could do that in order to force passes. Now, I'm not sure they will, because Rob Ryan has been willing in the past to really double-team big-time wide receivers.
And he has to here. I mean, Dez Bryant gets a double-team almost every
down.
He does,
yeah. And the Rams last week were very aggressive with their double-teams on Dez Bryant. Keenan Lewis is having an excellent season for the Saints, but I'm not sure he's a guy you line up one-on-one cover zero against Dez Bryant. So if you're going to double-team him, and to me the definition of double-teaming him, it's not just on third downs. It's on certain first and second downs, which is when the running game could be a factor. So if you're going to sacrifice body, if you're going to double-team Bryant, you're going to have to sacrifice bodies in the run box at some point. I'll be real curious to see how they play that. The other interesting factor is they do a lot of dime personnel, and when you're dime, you're a little bit lighter, so you're not as solid against the run, but you're also faster, and so you guys can cover more ground. So maybe you can get away with showing double team and trusting that one of those double team guys can also get down and help out. It's going to be a chess match here, but they have not had to go up against this kind of a Cowboys team before, a run-oriented Cowboys team.
We talked about last week a little bit about the Saints not having that dynamic pass rusher on that line. But
I may be wrong about that.
Rush looked a lot of improved from week to week with Junior Gillette and Cameron Jordan.
The first guy, Gillette, he's having a very good season. Yeah, Jordan's a good player too, but when we say they don't have a pass rush, what we mean is they don't have a true speed edge rusher that will make you slide your protection. They might have guys who are good pass rushers that can...
Someone who forces an adjustment, yeah.
Right, and just raw talent guys pretty much. Like a Cameron Jordan type guy is someone who can beat you with technique and maybe lateral movement, all that kind of stuff, but he doesn't line up and scare the hell out of you just from his speed. Junior Gillette might be, though. He's having the best season of his career so far. It's early, but he can move within foam boot spacing real well, so he's good one-on-one on an island. He has a quick first step. He's playing with more consistent leverage this season. So they might have.
Did you not see that in the first 2 weeks, though? Because
with Gillette?
Yeah.
Well, when I said they didn't have a pass rush, in the first 2 weeks, you're almost going off of what you've seen in previous years, because that's all you have to go off of. But I've watched all three Saints games on film now. Gillette has stood out at some point in all three of those games. The other guy who has stood out, by the way, and we're talking about Dallas will be a running team, and I think that'll continue in this week, Curtis Lofton. It's either him or DeAndre Levy as the best inside linebacker in the NFL through 3 weeks. He's been absolutely phenomenal.
Well, and the Saints, they did get the win this week, 20-9 over the Vikings, but it still doesn't seem like everything is clicking on either side of the ball. I can't specifically point at anything, but has anything jumped out to you on film where you go, this isn't the Saints I've seen over the last couple of years?
Not really, because...
And it's still so early.
It's early, And I don't think the offense is sputtering. I think they're showing the signs. They still look like the Saints. It just hasn't clicked in the right ways at times. You had the pick six, the Gibson, and the Browns game, and that kind of changed the flow of that game. They were moving the ball all over Cleveland other than that pick six. And then they got off to a hot start against Minnesota, and then things slowed down a little bit. Minnesota's defense, though, to its credit, stepped up against the run. And, you know, as we always say, the other teams have good players, too.
It's the NFL.
So the Saints, I haven't watched the Saints and thought, man, they look off. I haven't thought that yet.
One, we got to keep in mind that the last time these two teams met, the Cowboys gave up 625 yards.
Was it that many? Offense.
Yeah. I think it was a Saints record. I'm not sure.
Then that was on a Sunday night as well, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Yeah. They play, and I remember these teams used to play on Saturdays before Christmas a lot.
Did you see the stuff with Maurice Claiborne this week and his?
Yeah. Yeah. Maurice Claiborne was picked on quite a bit. He deserved to lose his starting job. He had a bad game last week.
And then
he
left the team for 2 days, didn't he, or something?
I guess he got mad and left the facility when they told him that which is surprising because he got benched last season.
Yeah.
So I can't get inside a guy's head. I think you do, you know, there's a discussion now is should they even play him ahead of Sterling Moore? I think that's not for me to answer. Yeah, he's a better player than Sterling Moore. He hasn't been god-awful so far, but he doesn't deserve to start ahead of Scandrick. Whether they choose to play him or not, it's a function of how that relationship works inside their building with head coaches, position coaches. I don't know if he's thrown temper tantrums before or if this is an aberration. I can't speak to that.
Well, and this is also not the time to have these issues before you're about to meet the Saints, who do have a lot of offensive weapons.
They do, but I'll tell you this. The Saints don't play out of three receiver sets as much as people think. The Saints' offense occurs a lot out of base personnel. They even do some stuff out of three tight ends, one running back, which is beyond – that's heavy
it's
personnel.
Odd, yeah.
It's because of Jimmy Graham. There is no more of a movable chess piece in the league than Jimmy Graham. He is the ultimate X factor because they can treat him like a wide receiver. But the point I'm getting at is if you were to go into a game against the Saints with only two normally if you go into an NFL game against a good passing team and you only have two cornerbacks, quality corners available, I think everyone would agree you're at risk, correct?
Yeah.
The Saints, I think you can get – I don't think you're necessarily as – you're still a little bit at risk, but you're not – you can still compete. You're not in big trouble because they're going to keep your linebackers and safeties on the field to begin with.
Andy, I think the most interesting games week to week are the teams that there's less consistency from game one to game two or two to three. And that's what we see with the Carolina Panthers and Baltimore Ravens, and they're coming together. So I think
someone's going to come away 3-1 from
right,
this too.
That's crazy to me because you can't, there's not a lot you can draw from each week so far early, as we've said, that seems to carry over to the next week for either of these teams.
Yeah, and I watched the Panthers Week 3 game. I'm getting to the Ravens film after the show, so I'm real curious about that because exactly.
But you watched the game.
I haven't seen the Ravens-Brown game yet.
Okay.
Because you can only watch one. I can only watch one at a time anymore. I can truly watch it.
Sure.
So I'm real curious to see how they looked on film because of what you just said. Carolina, to me, that offense – Kelvin Benjamin's going to be such an X factor for them because they need wide receivers. Every team needs wide receivers, but they need a playmaker. They
yeah,
don't
he
have
do
any
some pretty
the,
incredible
yeah,
things.
Yeah, and the rest of those guys have to be helped by the play design. They have to get open through scheme versus a guy like Benjamin. He's their only guy who can truly create one-on-one, and I think his style of play meshes well with Cam Newton's. I think it's a race as well. Benjamin's got a lot to learn and how many mistakes will be made in that learning process. And that could determine how this team does because they're going to need their passing game. The Panthers, contrary to popular belief, are not a run-based team. They're a passing-based offense. That happens to put up big running numbers because of their quarterback.
So did the Steelers see that Benjamin was that real only playmaker and that's what limited that offense in last week?
Perhaps, and Greg Olsen's also a playmaker for them, so when you're talking about scheming against them, which is what you're getting into with the Steeler question, you look at guys who can, you know, hurt you and where on the field do they hurt you, and the Steelers had a very good feel for Carolina's route concepts and their route combinations and understanding where guys were going to be on the field. The Steelers are tremendous with matchup zones as well, so it's a veteran defense that came in and saw a team that had tendencies you could spot because, again, when you're scheme-based, then you also have tendencies that show up because you have to rely on certain concepts. You can't – you're limited. I mean, that's what limited athletes do. You limit the offense. And Kelvin Benjamin's going to take the limits off, but he's limited by his own learning curve at this point. So something's got to give here, and they're going up against the Baltimore Ravens defense. That's pretty good and can be pretty multiple once – I don't know if it's healthy enough this week, but once this Ravens defense gets healthy enough in the long haul in the secondary, I think they're going to be a very, very good defense and very multiple. But they'll be a tough matchup this week, too.
You mentioned that Carolina is kind of misnamed as being a running team and a run-first team last
week. And I know the stats don't agree with that, by the way.
They do last week, 42 yards on the ground.
Okay.
So, I mean, there you go.
It's not just what the numbers are, it's the way those numbers come about. And when are you calling the runs? What personnel groupings are you doing it? How are you doing it? And I'm telling you, the Panthers do not have an attitude-based running game where they're going to line up and run the ball down your throat when you know it's coming. They're not the 49ers of last year. They're not the Seahawks that we see. They are a finesse type of rushing attack. And by the way, all their running backs are hurt right now anyway.
Well, in the same cases with the Ravens, too. They're short at running back, too. Bernard Pierce, I think, is coming back this week. He's expected to come back this week. And obviously no Ray Rice, so everyone's kind of scrambling this season. All you just wrote a story. Your story was published today about the NFL MASH.
Yeah, because of all the injuries
this
year. It's no fun.
No.
I thought that would be a quick story to write. I thought I'll be done by Monday
afternoon.
A lot
of guys.
It took forever. Yeah, it took me a day and a half to write that.
From what I saw, though, the Texans-Bills matchup, they're only missing one apiece, too, in Clowney and Kiko Alonso. So,
yeah, that's,
I mean, this
that's
is one of the exceptions.
Yeah, and the Clowney injury is almost like you lose the sugar on top a little bit because that defense does not fundamentally change with him out of the lineup.
Just it certainly helps.
Well, yeah, he looked good in the first half of the game in week one that he played. With Alonso out, we've talked about him a lot, especially for a guy that's out for the season almost. Most likely out for the season.
Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah. That does change the Bills' fundamental approach, but, you know, that's neither here nor there at this point. This is a fun matchup. Someone's coming out of this one 3-1 as well.
And I don't think anyone expected that. If you would have looked week four, Bills-Texans.
Bills tend to start hot, though.
Yeah, they do.
Which obviously has nothing to do, though, with how they're going to play this season.
Everyone thinks they'll Bills it up. You know?
They'll Bills it up.
No,
is that the verb for going 6-10?
It's like jetsing it up. It's like calling a timeout when you just scored a touchdown.
Oh, come on.
Okay, we don't need
miscommunications happen, John.
Last week against the Giants, did we see a little bit more of the true Ryan Fitzpatrick with the Texans?
Maybe. I hate to say that. You know, I was on a Buffalo radio show today, and I came on right after Fitzpatrick.
Oh.
And I had said something very negative about him in my...
Fitzpatrick was on in Buffalo?
Yeah, he was on the Buffalo show.
Good for him. Nice for him.
Yeah, and I was hard on him this week. And then they asked me to start ripping him on the show. Like, right. And I know he's not sitting on the line listening, and I know he doesn't care what I have to say. But I was a little uneasy because I thought, if he's still on the show in Buffalo, are they, like, super loyal to him there or something? You know, like, it was the Bills radio network, the teams.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think. I mean, I'm sure.
So he must have been doing them a favor by even going on the show.
And then they asked me to start. But what I told them on the show is that he's not. I wrote this, and they asked me about this. I get the sense he's not a real cerebral quarterback before the snap. I don't think he sees the field sharply before the snap. I think he is a reactionary type QB where he has to see some of the action unfold before he can get a feel for what he's doing. And I think that's part of the reason. That and then you mix in an arm that he thinks is a lot stronger than it really is, and I think that's a big part of the reason why you see the wild inconsistencies with him, where you see him throw some rocket balls into a crowd, and like the Giants, they intercepted him 3 times last week.
Well, and the Bills secondary has actually been really good this year too. They've been pretty impressive. And if Fitzpatrick gets a little rattled early on, you have to expect that things don't go well for the Texans. I mean, I feel like all of their success really hinges on
it. Let's put it this way, because I have trouble expecting things not to go well for NFL teams because of what I always say, they have good players too. But you can see where there are potential pitfalls for the Texans, and that is inherent with having Ryan Fitzpatrick as your quarterback. There's a little bit of wild stallion in him.
Well, and the Texans may be without Arian Foster again.
Is he? What's his? You know,
he's day-to-day.
Okay.
He had a hamstring injury or something.
Yeah, that's a whole different offense without him. Although, Alfred Blue ran the ball fairly well with him in there, with you know, when he was in there last week. But Foster looks like his old self if he's healthy. His first two games were phenomenal. I'm more concerned, though, on the other side, if we're going to talk about the running game, I'm more concerned about Houston's run defense. It got exposed against the Giants. And the Giants ran out of the shotgun a lot. And I think something you can do against Houston is I would spread out and run the ball out of 3 and 4 receiver sets because the Texans can get a little bit light with their sub packages. They don't have a lot of girth around those guys.
Do you think that there may be a possibility that gets misread, though, with the problem with the Texans? Because the Giants, that run blocking looked really good against the Texans.
Well, yeah, but that also means that the guys up front are getting beat. And don't you have J.J. Watt up front? I mean, you're supposed to have a favorable matchup in every spot.
It looked like they completely avoided him.
Well, they did, but just because you're avoiding Watt doesn't mean other guys still are going to draw favorable matchups because Watt's taken 2 blockers on every single play.
On the Bills' side, on the defense, have you seen – I mean, from a little bit of an outsider perspective, I haven't seen a lot of blitzing from the Bills. It seems to be a lot more of a hang-back kind of a defense this year when we've seen how dynamic that defensive line can be with Williams and –
Yeah. Well, they changed – you know, they went to Jim Schwartz at coordinator. I thought they'd do less blitzing than they have. Now, it's not as much as they did under Mike Pettine, certainly, and that's going to be true of almost any time you go from a 3-4 based scheme to a 4-3 scheme, you're going to blitz less, in part because you already have four down linemen, so you don't need to blitz to get your number of rushers on there. But I think the Bills, I've been impressed with their scheme so far. I think they've been fairly multiple, more multiple than I would have guessed. They're certainly more multiple than the Lions were under Jim Schwartz last year.
I'm kind of bouncing around here, but Sammy Watkins in week two had that big game, big breakout, over 100 yards receiving. And this last week, week three, was a less impressive game, obviously. Have you seen anything from him so far that gives you kind of an indication of the kind of wide receiver that he will be in the NFL?
Well, I watched in that week two film, they build around him a lot, which is, that's not breaking news, but he's got the traits that you would expect. I mean, there's a certain explosiveness to his vertical movement, and he has good control when getting in and out of his break. So he's a tough matchup. In fact, we talked to the guy who's going to be guarding him at least some of the time.
Yeah.
He's not going to follow him around all game because the Texans don't necessarily play that way anymore under Romeo Crennel now, but Kareem Jackson. And that's going to be a great matchup. And Watkins, whether he's lining up against Jackson or Jonathan Joseph on the other end, he's going to be facing a really good man-to-man or zone-based cornerback this week.
Well, let's go ahead and get to that right now then. Andy spoke with Kareem Jackson earlier this week, and so here's the interview.
We got Kareem Jackson on the phone. Kareem, the quarterback of the Houston Texans, off to an excellent start this season. Kareem, I want to start with a mea culpa. I wrote in the magazine, Sports Illustrated magazine, before the season that you were strictly a boundary corner. And obviously, I've been wrong. And I apologize, and I've been way wrong, because not only have you played the slot and nickel this year, but you played it extremely well. Talk about your transition there and what you've learned with adding that part of your game or expanding your game in that way.
I was asked to take on that role by the coaches this year, and I think it was all for the team. And in my eyes, playing on the inside is definitely a big transition. Things happen a lot faster in there. You have to process things a lot faster. From seeing formation splits, just recognizing formations and things like that. But, it's been a great transition. I'm definitely having a lot of fun taking on that role.
When you process things faster in its formation stuff, how much of that involves pre-snap motion and shifts and stuff like that?
That's definitely involved a lot, especially when you're playing the team that does a lot of motioning and shifting and things like that. You have to be able to see the whole formation, because that could tip you off something that it can give you some kind of some kind of read, or you can break on a ball, or you can get a TFL or whatever the case may be. So you have to be able to see both sides of the formation and recognize all those things.
Talk about blitzing from the slot. I know you did that a lot in week one against Washington. Is that something is that instinctive as an athlete, or is that, how often do you work on that in practice? Have you been taught anything specific about it?
I think you have to have instincts in there. Just depending on the teams you play. Some teams like to wait to the play clock, wind all the way down to, three or four seconds before they snap it. So you have to be able to see those things, watch for those things on film, and we definitely work on that, and practice, blitzing off the edge. It's something that we don't do much as rushing the pass or as DB. So any extra time you can get in working on it on the pass, in the practice field, it definitely can help you in game time situations.
Take me through your I was really curious about your interception against Oakland. It looked to me like that was an inverted cover two concept. You were playing over the top. Is that what the call was, or did something evolve as the play unfolded? Just take me through that whole process.
Yeah, we was in a type of inverted coverage where, we rolled up on the strong side, and the weak side, I was kind of playing a half field, and, it's just something that before, the ball actually was snapped, something Oakland liked to do a lot when they got into that wide wing set. They liked to run all go out of that set. So, I was able to see that before the ball snapped, and I was able to kind of, bait the quarterback into what I wanted him to do by, showing that I was going to take the outside guy, and I was able to break, back over the inside guy, and I was able to steal one.
You said you knew they were going to do that out of that set. I'm always fascinated by that, how much players and teams know about their opponents coming in? Obviously, that you learned that from watching the Raiders film. Was that something that coaches pointed out or that you guys spotted in the meeting rooms? Just how did you discover that they do that tendency out of that set?
It's just something that we, you know, it's just something that they show continuously on film, you know, some kind of way, whether they motion to it or whether they just lined up into it, you know, is out of that particular formation and that, you know, that set, you know, they, their tendencies were more likely to run all go out of that, you know. So, I mean, it's a good thing I was able to see it before the ball was snapped and, you know, recognize that, like I said, that formation. So I was able to make a play.
Talk to me. I got two more questions. We'll get you out of here. One of them is Romeo Crennel's scheme versus Wade Phillips. They're both a 3-4. They're different types of 3-4s, obviously, and then I assume there's differences in the coverages a little bit on the back end. What has been the biggest difference to you with the two schemes?
I mean, I don't really want to compare, you know, either or, you know, as far as, you know, both of those guys are great defensive coordinators, you know, Wade Phillips, you know, with his history and, you know, with Coach, you know, Crennel being here now, you know, he definitely does some things differently. You know, we definitely love what we're doing as a defense. You know, we're getting a chance to see the ball a lot more, you know, we're playing a lot more zone and stuff like that. Like I say, when we're able to see the ball come out of the quarterback's hand, we're able to make some plays on the ball, you know. So, I mean, I think for the most part, that's probably right now the biggest difference.
My last question for you, Kareem, is I think people forget that you were somewhat of a maligned cornerback early in your career. You had some critics. You were a first-round pick. People were eyeing you. And you blossomed past that. You clearly improved from year to year. Was there ever an epiphany that you had, the light bulb go on? Or let's say you're talking to like a D. Millen or another cornerback that struggled early in his career but first-round talent. What would you tell him or a guy like that where, hey, it's the light bulb will come on at some point. Here's how.
You got to continue to work at it. You know, you just got to continue to go in and, you know, grind. And, you know, it's like with anything in life. You know, once you first started, you may have some, you know, some trouble with it. You know, you have to learn some different things, some things that's going to help you, you know, throw away some things that, you know, probably put you in some bad situations, and just continue to keep all the good things, you know, just continue to work on your technique. And, you know, for me, you know, I always told myself, you know, I'm just continue to work. And, you know, once I get to a point where I'm comfortable and, you know, things slow down for me, you know, I'm going to go out and I'll be able to make some plays. And, you know, I think, you know, the more and more I got comfortable, you know, in this league and, you know, in whatever defense I was in, I was able to make some plays. And, you know, I just continue to work at it each and every day, and I've been able to be successful thus far.
And obviously we thank Kareem Jackson for taking the time to speak with Andy. Andy, I have a quick question for you, though, about Kareem. How useful is it for a team like the Texans to have a cornerback that you can use both on the boundary and in the slot?
It's incredibly useful because it takes away the offense's ability to easily dictate matchups. It makes it harder to dictate matchups for the offense. And, the Bills have a guy like this as well, Corey Graham, who I think's playing as probably a little better than Jackson even, having a sensational season. He can go inside or outside. So both teams in this one have diverse defensive backfields, and that's a huge plus for their defenses.
Well, obviously, a defensive back that's versatile is more valuable to a team because you can move them around in different ways. And the Pittsburgh Steelers lost a guy kind of like that, Nyke Taylor.
That's a bad injury. I hated to see that. I mean, you hate to see a guy lift his arm and have it hanging in the wrong way. But we're talking about a 12th-year veteran player who's been really good. And if he could catch the ball, he'd have 5 or 6 Pro Bowls to his name. He's even said his hands are like feet, and they are, unfortunately. But the rest of him is tremendous. And now he's out of the lineup. That hurts Pittsburgh. Now, they weren't using Nyke Taylor as that move-around guy. You're right. He has been that for a long time. This season, actually the end of last season, but they solidified it going into this season, they made him strictly their right-side cornerback, and they tried to simplify their secondary. I think they said they did it for communication issues. They may have done it now also to accommodate the guy's abilities. Taylor, they might feel, is just better on the outside. Whatever it is, they have adjustments to make there now. And there's a – it's – the Steelers have an interesting secondary because they do so much with coverage, with matchup zone principles. So you play zone and then you match up to guys out of the zone. And you have to know a lot about what you're doing in order to play that way. If you know what you're doing, you don't need to be super talented because you're going to have help around you. But you have to know what you're doing. And there's a reason we don't see rookies or free agents come in and play cornerback for the Steelers right away.
How different is this defense now without outside linebacker Jarvis Jones and Ryan Shazier is out as well with the knee injury? Are we going to see a very different Steelers team than we saw in those first few weeks?
If Shazier is out, as I understand it, my guess is he's out for this game, but I don't
sprained MCL.
Don't think he'll be out more than 2 or 3 weeks. I hope. That's the big difference. Now, Jarvis Jones, you just replace him with Arthur Motes, and that's a significant drop-off in talent, no question, but it doesn't change the way you have to play necessarily. With Shazier out, it might, because they don't like Vince Williams, their backup inside linebacker, and I guess now it's actually Sean Spence, so I can't speak to this, but my guess is they're not huge on Sean Spence in coverage either. They don't know what they have there, and last year they didn't know what they had with Vince Williams in coverage, and it did not go well. So what did they do? They scrapped their nickel package. They got rid of the two linebacker thing, and they went to their three safety dime, and that brought Troy Polamalu into the box. And now all of a sudden, okay, you're good in the box again. You've got Polamalu's now at linebacker, and so we're fine. But now we don't have Polamalu because he's not running around being a missile. So there's a domino effect, and I really hope they don't have to go back to that three safety dime package because they're not as dynamic in that. And so if Shazier's in the lineup, he and Timmons form an excellent two linebacker nickel. But if he's out, they're going to have to figure something out there.
Were you surprised at all at how quickly Shazier was able to pick up those concepts?
Yes. Believe me, I've sat down with Steeler coaches before and said, teach me the basics, and you learn very quickly.
They're like, you don't have time.
No, you can't do that. The basics are not basic in that scheme. But once you get it sorted out, again, there's a lot of – every guy's got help around him. They don't put guys on an island in Pittsburgh. But you got to learn how that help interacts and how that help is with you.
And if you're going to be lessened on defense, I mean, the best opportunity is to go up against a team that's struggling on offense, and that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
And I wouldn't get carried away. I know I'm the guy that picked the Bucs, and my Twitter feed was waiting for me the next morning after that blowout to the Falcons. I can't believe how many people take the time to scan the image of the magazine predictions and then send it to me. Yeah.
Wow, how nice of them.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that they care, obviously. I'm not bailing yet. I can't bail yet. It's only 3 games in. The sky is falling in Tampa, but that doesn't mean you're going to get killed by it. That team's not as bad as they showed last week. They'll get Doug Martin back at some point.
Lose Josh McCown. Offensive coordinator. I don't mean to be callous.
I think that has impacted them a lot. Jeff Tedford being gone. I think they didn't foresee that, obviously.
Yeah.
McCown, I hate to be callous, he wasn't playing well anyway, though. I was never sold on the idea of just sending Glennon to the bench. Now, I bought into it because I do think McCown, you can win with him as a starter, as a plug-in guy, and I thought they had all the pieces around him. But when you're saying you can win with the guy as a plug-in guy, you're basing that on him breaking even. You're not basing it on him putting you in the loss margin. And that's what McCown was doing. He's had some terrible decisions, especially down in the red zone. That's not a plug-in guy. And so Mike Glennon, what will probably happen, they'll put in Glennon, they'll feel this subtle need to scale the offense back because he hasn't gotten as many reps. He's a young guy. And scaling it back, they're going to simplify and find their rhythm, and I think they're going to be a lot better off. Now, they might not, Pittsburgh, you don't just go into Pittsburgh and find your rhythm easily. But I don't think this Bucs team they're obviously not as bad as they've shown, but I still think they have some good pieces to work with and can salvage the season.
Well, and at least the defense is getting back Gerald McCoy this week. So
that's a huge factor. And Adrian Claiborne lost, by the way, all you Twitter people who told me I couldn't bail on the NFC South pick because of, I said Claiborne's out, I said that might make me change my pick. I think the Claiborne loss is huge because he was such a big part of what they did with McCoy.
Well, when you make predictions like that, when you do the preseason thing, you don't take into account who's going to go down. I mean,
right.
That's ridiculous.
No, it'd be inappropriate to guess who's going to go down. Now, some people tweeted me and said, you can't make that your out. You can't have an Adrian Claiborne injury be your out. But my point is, and that's fair, I get that. My point is, that's a defensive line that's built around concepts, and it centers around McCoy and having stunts and twists set up with him. And right now they don't have a guy to go with that because Michael Johnson has not shown up for them yet.
Are there any similarities there with that defensive line to the Detroit Lions, who also kind of utilize the defensive line better than most?
Yeah, they're very similar. They might be the two most similar defensive lines in football. In fact, they have, no, not by coincidence, they have the two best defensive tackles in football.
Yeah, and so the Lions are taking on the Jets this week, who have had a couple of...
Oh, that's why you were doing that.
Yeah,
right.
It was a little transition.
Yeah.
You didn't even notice.
I wasn't looking at this. Yeah.
That's seamless. So yeah. They're on the road against the Jets.
It was.
Now, yeah, you ruined it. They're on the road against the Jets. The Jets have had a couple of mishaps, a few things not go their way.
The whole
losses.
Geno Smith. Yeah. Now we have the Geno Smith watch on, right?
Yeah.
They're going – the Lions, as I mentioned earlier, they had a great week against Green Bay in the secondary, playing a variety of coverages, and there's no way to predict that because the secondary is certainly not their strength. But Darius Slay has bounced back from a bad rookie season. He's been pretty solid so far. And now you have the Jets offense, which can't get anybody open on its own. We've talked about – what we said about Carolina not being able to get those guys open unless you're doing it through scheme. With the Jets, it's sometimes not even that.
Well, and the Lions, this pressure is only going to cause problems for Geno Smith. I mean, it's...
Yes, but, you know, the pressure hasn't been there a whole lot from Detroit. I mean, it's not like... I mean, they conceptually, they're similar to Tampa Bay, but it's not like Detroit's been wrecking people.
Against Green Bay, though, that pocket looked to just collapse in a heartbeat.
I'd have to go back and look at that closer. I didn't come away from that game thinking that the pressure, I guess, yeah.
Oh, I thought Aaron Rodgers was being forced into things way too early. That's what I grabbed from.
All right, let's for the discussion sake of this week, let's say that does happen. And then how does Geno Smith respond? What I always like about Geno Smith, now, obviously he makes some dumb decisions that he pays a heavy price for. And we saw that Monday night. He has six turnovers that have resulted in touchdowns, interceptions, I think, that have gone for touchdowns in the last, since ever he became a starter, the last 19 games, regular season games of all teams. That's ridiculous, and that you can't win that way. But the lows are really low, but I think the highs are impressive as well. And I like that he's able to stand in the pocket and make throws with bodies around him. He's willing to do that. And so when you say there's pressure coming, I don't know if that means it's doomsday necessarily for the Jets. I mean, it's not good, but I think Geno Smith's a better quarterback than people give credit for. He just has to find a way to knock off the mistakes.
Well, that may be true, but we still saw that pressure affect Eli Manning and Aaron Rodgers and hurt both run games. So,
yeah, I mean, not unfair. And the Jets don't have a great running game either right now, although Chris Ivory, the more he gets the ball, the better that running game will be.
But if you eliminate that, then that really hamstrings that offense.
And it's possible they will eliminate it in Detroit because, as I mentioned earlier, DeAndre Levy is playing out of his mind right now. He's carrying that run defense, and he's going to have to even more with Steven Tulloch hurt. And I hope
I'm just going to ask you how that will
That does impact him a lot. Yeah, that impacts this week, all weeks moving forward, because last week I believe they put Levy at the mic position once Tulloch went down. Levy's better in space. He's better on the outside. He's better where he's using instincts and being an athlete more than diagnosing plays and chasing. Now, he can do all of it, but I think a guy like that who's having the best year of his career, now you have to move him to a new position. I just hope it doesn't have negative impacts for them, because they're already without Steven Tulloch. That's enough of a negative impact.
Could this be the week that we finally see a team take advantage of this Jets secondary we've been kind of waiting to
crumble? I think we've seen that already. I wouldn't say finally see.
Well, but they've played fairly well in a scrambled order, it seems.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, Chicago got them.
Yeah, that's true. They were able to move the ball.
And look, here's every single week, the more Antonio Allen has been on film at corner, the worse he seems to get. And
first 2 weeks, they were good.
He was solid the first week, but he wasn't challenged in specific ways. They didn't know what the opponent didn't know what they had against Antonio Allen. Who was it? The Raiders, I think.
Yes, that was week one.
Yeah, and the Raiders, the Raiders also don't have a challenging passing game by any stretch. So then you get into week two, and now you see Antonio Allen getting picked on more. And then you go to week three against Chicago, and now they're targeting him specifically. Well, now it's week four, and it's Calvin Johnson coming to town, and Antonio Allen, if he's not matched on Johnson, then he'll probably be matched one-on-one against somebody else. I think it's going to be another rough week for him.
Well, and it could be a rough week this week for the Tennessee Titans, too. Maybe their third loss of the season when they have to go on the road against the Colts. Andrew Luck put up a brilliant performance against, yes, albeit Jacksonville, but still great.
It's, yeah, as we say, the other team has NFL players, too. Now, yes, albeit Jacksonville a little bit, because that was not a competitive game. And Luck, they had a great feel for Jacksonville's cover three zone principles and every single passing concept they dialed up, and certainly every single play action rollout to the right specifically exploited the cover three and got guys open by design. And those guys were already getting open by talent as it was. And Luck, it was easy pickings. Luck read the field. He saw it. Now, they're not going to have that kind of luxury this week against the Titans conceptually, because the Titans are not going to line up in the same zone look every single snap.
How do you take advantage of the Colts, who have those deficiencies on defense like a lot of these teams we're seeing with all the injuries?
I think you go in being willing to let the play extend. The Colts don't have a pass rush, and so you go in and say, okay, well, we can throw the ball deeper then. We if they don't have a pass rush, then let's see how long their secondary can hold up in coverage.
Well, and the San Diego Chargers are testing secondaries too this year so far, and Jacksonville coming off the beating from Andrew Luck and the Colts, now they have to go up against Phillip Rivers and what has so far been one of the best offenses in the NFL.
And I hope it doesn't change with Danny Woodhead out, and I think it will, though.
That's rough.
That's really rough. Woodhead's a top 10 back in the NFL in terms of value to his team. He fits the Chargers system more effectively than all but, in the very least, all but nine other guys fit their team system. He is a matchup nightmare, and he was so great in their underneath passing game, their screen concepts, their interior running game, and splitting out wide in the 3x2 empty sets. You lose all of that dimension now. Now, they can still attempt it with Donald Brown, but Donald Brown is not Danny Woodhead.
We saw an increased workload for Ladarius Green this last week. Did you see him on film?
What is it with you and Ladarius Green?
I like every Ladarius
week,
Green.
Every week you're asking about Ladarius Green.
Well, first week he wasn't used at all. Second week a little more. And week three we see the Ladarius Green breakout.
Well, I think we'll see – here's what I'm going to give you on Ladarius Green. I think we'll see more of it moving forward because of the Woodhead factor, actually. It's his touches were going to running backs, and now they're going to be dispersed more to tight ends.
Are the Chargers for real? Are you on the Chargers?
Yeah, I think they're for real, but I'm worried about the defense losing Melvin Ingram as well. That's a disappointing week for San Diego.
It's the injuries are everywhere, too. It's terrible that this has to be the main line of a lot of these stories. And this week we have Miami Dolphins going on the road against Oakland. Oakland Raiders almost snagged one from Tom and company.
Yeah, they did, but boy, that was a boring game to watch.
Yeah,
I watched a film on that right before
that
coming
last drive.
Yeah, it would be until the last drive. And by the way, that holding penalty
that was
against,
absurd.
Yeah, that was. I didn't know. Were people talking about that Sunday? I had it on Red Zone. I have a big TV, and then I have Red Zone, and then another little TV.
You
next
don't need to
it.
Brag, Andy. But
well,
yeah,
no, I'm just telling you. I see things, but I don't hear what's going on. So I saw that play, but I didn't have any context. How did people react to that?
Well, I think, based on Twitter at least, I think a lot of people were surprised because the offensive lineman stood pretty stout, and the defender spun into him, and then
yeah, here's
went
what was
down.
Surprising. He was called for holding, and he didn't hold, and so there was the surprise. It's a phantom call that you
terrible.
Could say cost them the game.
And Darren McFadden just walked into the end zone.
Yeah, it was. And the other thing is, even if he did hold, and I'm not saying you give a guy a pass for this, but just from the concept of the Raiders getting the points they needed to beat the Patriots, let's say he did hold, that had no impact on the play still. McFadden scores no matter what happens with, I think it was Logan Ryan that drew the penalty.
You've been impressed so far with Khalil Mack, right, for Oakland?
Really, really impressed. Really impressed. I'm glad you asked about him. Miami Dolphins, they don't have a guy. Brandon Albert cannot block Khalil Mack. I don't know who in the league
can. Not a lot.
I mean, he's every bit, maybe every bit and more of what we were told he'd be. It's speed off the edge. I love his lateral explosiveness. He can get upfield and then dart towards, you know, contort his body laterally towards the line of scrimmage and slip blocks or work down towards the running back, whatever he needs to do. He's an athlete in every sense of the phrase, and he understands football, too. You can tell he's not just a guy running around out there with a lot of speed. He's not like they're playing the Dolphins. He's not Deion Jordan, who's out this game, but Deion Jordan's a speedster type guy. He's much more than that. He understands football.
Well, and the Dolphins this week are coming in with quarterback questions. Now we're already, we're already starting to hear the Matt Moore talks, and Ryan Tannehill's not impressed with how Philbin is handling this whole situation. And
that would be short-sighted to go with Matt Moore all of a sudden. That would be really short. That'd be a coach worried about his job.
Which I think he should be.
Well, it's, I mean, why? Because they're 1-2?
Well, no, I mean, things probably need to go well this year for the Dolphins for Philbin to retain his job next year. Do you see him, if they go 7-9, is he the coach week one?
Probably not.
See, that's what I'm saying. So I don't know
why. Okay, but
he would
does he really think Matt Moore is going to get them?
No, that's my point. That's why I don't think that it makes any sense that you would go with Matt Moore in any scenario.
And well, the way you could argue if they did want to go to Matt Moore, then what they'd be saying is we think the system that we've installed with Bill Lazor is working, but the quarterback's not getting the job done. Tannehill's not playing well. Don't get me wrong.
21 for 43 last week.
Yep, and he wasn't good the 2 weeks before that either. His accuracy was off coming into week three, and it got even more off, at least going by those completion numbers. So if you're not completing passes, it is hard to run the system. So maybe that's how they're feeling about Matt Moore. But Ryan Tannehill is not a guy you just toss aside. There are different expectations. There is more leeway for these first-round picks, and he's shown the first-round talent before. So I think it would be hasty to do that to Ryan Tannehill at this point. That'd be embarrassing for him, if nothing else, and I don't think he deserves that.
Well, and especially since Tannehill has that skill set as a progression read quarterback. Like, it's all there, right? So slow starts are common in the NFL. It happens. 1-2 is not uncommon. But the Atlanta Falcons are off to a quick start, okay? Matt Ryan
got a pretty good progression read quarterback of their
own. Matt Ryan has been unstoppable so far, and that offense looks as good as any, and they're going up against the Vikings, who can do some things on defense, but outside of that, there's not a lot there.
There isn't, because all their guys on offense are gone. Yeah. I watched Teddy Bridgewater last week. I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
It's one game, and we're not going nuts about it. He did leave a few throws on the field, which is going to happen with most rookies. But he made some throws under duress. He got productivity out of his legs. I thought the ball came out of his hand pretty well. A little bit of a weird delivery. I don't know if that'll be an issue or not. But I'm encouraged by that, because I did not have high expectations. I don't know much about him coming in. But from what I've heard from people I really respect within the league, the expectations for Bridgewater were not super high coming into this season.
If anything, wouldn't you want your young quarterback to that base skill to be he's okay when pressured? I mean, because everything else seems solvable outside of that.
Well, and if he's playing behind Minnesota's line, he's going to have to be, because Matt Khalil can be inconsistent. They're minus Brandon Fusco, who's finally figured out how to play right guard and then got hurt, unfortunately. And they're not super athletic at the other two spots around center John Sullivan. They're not athletic with Charlie Johnson at left guard, and they're not athletic with Phil Loadholt at right tackle. So he's going to have to extend some plays. Now, it might not be this week, though, because the Falcons have no pass rush.
Speaking of extending plays and needing to string some things together on offense, the New England Patriots are on the road against the Kansas City Chiefs. New England is 2-1, but
It's an ugly 2-1.
It's not a fancy 2-1.
No, their offense right now is there's nothing happening.
Stagnant.
Then the running game has been so-so, and the passing game, there's no vertical element to it, and it's apparent that they don't have a full Rob Gronkowski, and by that I mean he's not in there 55 snaps a game, and they're not really dictating the flow and pace of operation.
Well, and I don't think I'll ever be able to buy into Julian Edelman being a true number one option.
No, he's not a number one. He's going to have those type of numbers. I understand that. He had 111 catches last season, but he is the we've talked about these little slot receivers before. He's the consummate role player, and that's not a bad thing in a system like New England, where everybody's role can be, I mean, if it's a good system, then role players work. But
the Patriots have used him in much bigger of a capacity than just a slot receiver.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point. I'm surprised they let him return punts still, because he is such an integral part of their offense.
What if you lose him?
Yeah, and if you lose him, he's replaceable in terms of the skill set. But I'm almost certain the reason he's playing is because he understands every dimension of that offense, which you need from your receivers in a system like that that's pretty high in volume. he understands all that. So you would, if he's out, then you don't, there's certain things you won't be able to do conceptually. You'll become a lot more limited, but he's not out. We don't have to worry about that. He's healthy and he's playing. The guy they need back though, they need Gronkowski. And I think they need to get more of their running backs involved in the passing game. Shane Vereen hasn't gotten the touches, at least not, I think he needs to be getting 15 touches a game, either through runs and passes or however you want to do it, get the ball in his hands. And I want to see Tim Wright on the field more.
Well, and that was the acquisition they got back for the Logan Mankins trade.
So. Yeah, and they're missing Logan Mankins right now because Devy, who they've filled in at the guard for him, has been a liability at times.
And if you're an offense that's struggling, this would be a team to get going against, right? With the Kansas City having those holes on defense, rather, that could end up being the big game for Tom Brady and to get these things rolling and finally get everyone on the same page. Because the main thing about the Patriots is they look visibly disconnected. I mean, you watch the game and nothing seems to be right.
Yeah, and so this could be the team to get going against them, but it could also be problematic because the Chiefs do have a pass rush still. It's not they don't just line up and then get their butts handed to them. They're not as good without Derek Johnson, obviously. And you need Eric Berry in the lineup bad.
Yeah, that hurts.
But if you have a pass rush, you can mask a lot of deficiencies with that. Maybe not in the long haul. I think at some point all these injuries will catch up to this defense. But in the short haul, you can have a big game on a Monday night and get the win. And this game, I'm not this game is, yeah, it's at Arrowhead. I'm not a big home field advantage guy. I do think it matters.
It makes a difference.
Yeah, this stadium at a night game like that, I think it could be a factor. I'm expecting a good game, 16 to 21, something like that.
Well, and especially since the Chiefs are coming off a big road win, too. So they have that. The Mo is on their side, Andy.
The Mo. They needed that. How about Niles Davis?
Hey, he's looked good so far.
We talked on the show last week, right? And
he doesn't completely account for the loss of Jamal Charles, but because you can, of the things you can do with him. But
right, you're still productive though with him. He's still a good. He's an above average NFL runner.
Oh, he's much more than they even hoped for. I think that's what they're seeing in these last 2 weeks. He had 32 carries for 132 yards and a touchdown. So
now New England's run defense was outstanding last week. So we'll find out who's for real then, because that's going to be a real challenge for him against
Week 4. That's the who's for real week.
Yeah, but yeah, New England's
all around.
You know, New
book.
England's run defense also wasn't great though earlier in the season. It's been up and down. So, I think they're going to have trouble running the ball against this team, though.
And we'll have to just wait and see. And that's all we have this week for the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast. From Andy, I'm John. Thanks for sticking around.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.